Hi, friends. We're Luke and Christina Middendorf. I serve as the president of Family Life, and we're so glad you're joining us for Family Life today. Did you know that 40% of our ministry support comes in at the end of the year? That's why your gift right now makes such a difference.
Your generosity helps families experience the gospel and see God's faithfulness in their story. You can give at familylifetoday.com or call 800-FL today.
We're so grateful for you. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
I'm trying to control the narrative. I want to write the story. I want it to go how I want it to go. And I forget that, no, God has a plan in this. Mm-hmm. And when I can actually lean into that and say, okay, God, you're writing a good story. Can I be curious about that instead of critical of you for what you're writing?
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today.
This is going to be a great conversation again with Jim and Angela Davis about the health scare that they went through and how it affects marriage, because all of us go through trauma or health things at some point, and it can have a negative
or a positive. You can do better, yeah. And they have done better. So we're excited for you guys to hear what we're going to talk about today. So let's go.
You know, you have verses in the Bible that, like, especially the famous ones that you know off the top of your head, but something like this happens and they become so much more meaningful.
Yes, real.
Do you know the verse I'm about to talk about?
No, which one?
To live is Christ, to die is gain.
Yes, that was mine.
That was mine.
That was like, one. That's why Paul said it.
I've preached on it three times since, just because I want to spend time looking at it. And so I walked out of the hospital. What was weird was that I am more okay dying actually than I've ever been. And I want to live more than I ever have.
I feel that too.
And so what this is what was like going from my brain to my heart, I think. Usually you have somebody who, your average person has a high desire to live and a low desire to die.
Yeah.
In horrible situations, they might have a high desire to die, low desire to live. But what Paul's saying is he has a high desire for both. And I was feeling that. And it was just, it doesn't make sense unless you really understand why is death gain for the Christian? Mm-hmm. And because of what is on the other side of this life, why does that give eternal value to everything we do here and now? And so it's been just this beautifully sweet verse to me.
For me too. And also to think like, oh, my assignment on the earth isn't over.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's more for me to do. So it makes me more cognizant of God and like, Lord, like what else do you have for me?
This past summer was actually pretty sweet. I had my first sabbatical. Mm-hmm. We had an amazing counselor that we spent a lot of time with. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been really, she kind of pushed on the heart attack. She was like, listen, I'm no doctor. There have to be some things in your life that contribute in some way, because I would burn the candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. And anyway, there's a whole lot that the counselor did. The counselor listened more than, I made her feel like she talked a lot. She listened more. But I feel like you saw a weak part of me that I didn't want that I didn't want seen. But having allowed you in there, I feel like when I'm crying and you're doing breathing exercises with me in the den, I feel closer.
Yeah.
That's intimate, man, and vulnerable.
It is.
And I think that's what we needed. So we did a type of counseling called emotionally focused couples therapy, which was something that I said, if we ever do couples counseling, that's what I want to do. So it's really looking at the emotions that are at play. We're not talking about problem solving or homework. Like, we're talking about what is underneath your reactions, because we all get stuck in this negative cycle. So you have fights about different things, but they're always kind of the same kind of fight.
Because there's a root.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so that's what we were trying to uncover. Like, what are the messages underneath for both of us that we keep reacting to each other out of? And the reactions are more right now because we're trying to love a new person.
Yeah.
I'm not as empathetic. I'm not as patient, not as supportive. And so that's got to change in me. And that was
just
huge.
Why is that? you know?
Yes. Well, exhaustion, number one. I mean, just plain and simple exhaustion. Yes. And then just trying, it really is like learning to love a new person because you are wanting that old person back.
Yeah.
So there's a grief there. Yes. There's a grief there. Instead of thinking, how can I fix you? It's like, well, no, let me try to get to know this new version of you.
I think as you say that, Angela, there's a lot of listeners who are thinking, I need to do that.
Yes.
Whether it's a health-related issue, some sort of trauma, emotional, whatever, it's learning to love that person because we're changing all the time.
Yes.
All the time. So how did you learn to love the new person?
Well, number one, try not to fix them. Mm. Like, and that's going to require a lot of like giving them space to let you in. So like he said, the vulnerability, he didn't want me to see that weakness, but once we were able to go there and I could see that weakness and actually love him in it, that connected us on a deeper level.
I mean, was a struggle for you at first?
Yeah. Because how did you get beyond the, like, he's watching TV for 2 hours and it's just bugging you?
Yeah. Well, in that moment when we're in counseling, and that's part of my story, is that I won't get into like all the counseling theory, but I would put up walls when I felt like I didn't want somebody to see something. I didn't want to be vulnerable. I would put up a huge wall. And so I would feel that happening to me in the session. No. I didn't want him to know that. I didn't want to tell him that. And she would push on that. No, I want you to tell me, what is the thing you're thinking about right now? And I go, ugh. The message to me underneath was, I was always the bad guy. It was always my fault. And so I was harboring a lot of anger and bitterness because this is my belief. And I'm just getting angry about it because I know it's not always my fault. Why does it always have to be my fault?
Who's telling you it's your fault?
Yeah. Yourself? Internal. Yeah. Myself. Yeah. Just like
Jim wasn't doing underneath. That.
No, Jim never said that.
So your anger wasn't toward him?
No. No, it wasn't. And so it really, for me to expose the lies that I'm believing, what's driving my reaction towards him, was so helpful. Because then I felt seen and I didn't have to hide it anymore.
And his response was beautiful.
Well, yeah. He's like, you're not always the bad guy. Why do you think you're always the bad guy? You know? So.
And I could see the shift from caregiver. Then we talked about critical.
Yeah.
But then curious.
Yeah.
What's that look like?
I began to see her being more curious about what I'm feeling and why I feel the way I do. Our counselor would often say, all behavior makes sense when you know someone's story.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All behavior. Doesn't mean you have to agree with the behavior, but it makes sense.
Or like it.
Or like it, yeah. And I could just see her being curious. And I felt loved through her curiosity. And I'm stealing this from you, but you always say, you can't be curious and critical at the same time. I would see her being curious and it was like, criticality, is that a word? Went out the window. Critical spirit.
I've tried to train myself when I start realizing I'm being critical of him, other people, my kids, whomever, that I'm starting to recognize it. Oh, like I'm being really critical of this person right now. Why don't I flip that and be curious instead?
And it starts right here in your mind.
Yes.
It's like a decision.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think she's naturally good at this. I'm not, but I've started to, when I feel critical, I'll say in my mind, what would it look like to be curious?
Yeah.
And so being given the blessing of her curiosity, it made me want to return it. Mm. And again, we had a great counselor that would walk us through it. But we've just been able to go to some really deep places that I don't feel like we would have been.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think you would have ever gone there without this?
I would like to think now, having seen the value. And this isn't our first blip on the scale. I mean, we have some other things in our background that have been hard times, but it's like each one drills down the same fundamental truths that they just become more profound and more clear.
Well, I'm just thinking of so many couples that are living in the critical spot, unable to get to the curious
That's
part.
That's where we lived.
For years.
That's what your last book's about.
Yeah. And really I think a majority of couples live in that place.
Well, and it's hardest to do with your spouse.
Why do you think?
I think there's just so much emotion involved. You know, I think with other people, we can give them the benefit of the doubt. We can remove ourselves. We can have kind of a better perspective. But for some reason, there's emotional just...
expectation too.
Well, and I've heard you say before... it's something about safe places. The safest places are where you can
let your guard down, be yourself.
It's true. Yeah.
You know that you're going to be forgiven or accepted, which is a wonderful and beautiful thing. until we take advantage of it.
Mm. Yeah. And there's something about, right or wrong, I don't know if I'm right, but if you go through trauma, adversity, mm-hmm. struggle, well, it feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not well, it's scary. You feel yeah. pushed away. You're afraid yeah. to step in there. But if it's done well, it opens up emotions and mm-hmm. transparency. You may never have let that wall down, but now you're like, who cares about this stinking wall? What am I doing?
yeah.
There's no better. I got to go here, right? Yeah. Is that mm-hmm. sort of what you've experienced?
Totally. And just trauma in general. An event doesn't have to be traumatizing because of its severity. I mean, it really is how the person responds to it. How do they perceive it to be severe?
Because you might think, this is nothing.
Exactly.
Like, what in the world? You're such a baby.
But in marriage, if we feel like we've got somebody with us in it, we have a strong support, it almost buoys us a little bit in the face of that severity to maybe ride that wave in a different way where it's not as traumatizing as it could have been without that support. So I think we need each other in marriage because we're going to go through hard things that we don't see coming. I mean, that's kind of what trauma is. It comes out of nowhere. It's unexpected, out of the blue usually. I mean, just simple trauma.
As opposed to?
Well, a complex trauma, something that's happening ongoing, you know, like ongoing abuse or domestic violence. That, you know, is a different story. But this out of the blue trauma, most couples, if they're married long enough, we're going to experience something like that.
Hey, I think what we're talking about is great. And as you're listening, if there's something on today's episode that you're just clicking with, we want you to know that you're not alone because every single marriage has its fair share of highs, but also lows.
And if you're like us, you're wondering, where do we get help?
Exactly.
Where can we go to get help? Well, first of all, you're getting help right now, and we're thankful that you're listening. But we also want to share one of our favorite resources. It's a free guide that's filled with helpful marriage wisdom from real life couples who've been where you are. And you can grab your free copy today at familylife.com/marriagehelp. That's familylife.com/marriagehelp.
Let's say there's just a couple that's just like maybe one of them, the husband or the wife is going through depression, anxiety, but just, they just can't get out of it. And a spouse, as a spouse, you feel like I've given them grace. I've given them time. And your patience is wearing out.
Yeah.
And now you're critical. And let's say your husband or wife is watching TV or sleeping, so much sleeping. How do you get curious? Like, how do they get over to that place when they're so fed up with it? When they're like, if I've gone through it too, and I'm not reacting like this.
Yeah. First thought is it is a mind shift inside of your own brain. You have to train yourself. So we're laying down a new neural pathway or a new way of being with
someone. I call it training your brain.
Training your brain. So we have to do that. Now, what makes it hard in marriage is that often we've gotten in this negative cycle. So we respond to each other in a certain way. We put up walls. We retaliate. We say unkind things. And so we don't want to be curious. Like, it keeps us in the critical. Like, why would I want to be curious when you're just like, you know, roadblocking me here and there.
And I have to do everything now.
And I have to, yes, I'm exhausted. I don't even have room to be, you know,
watch
curious
a TV show
at this point. I don't know if I want to be curious about why you're watching so much TV or about your show. So I do think that's where, you know, it could be a friend. It could be your pastor. It does not need to be a counselor, but although they're great too, you need kind of an outside perspective who can help you see things. Because when, like for me as the spouse, if I'm isolating and I'm just getting bitter and nobody's challenging that perspective, I'm going to stay there. I'm going to stay in that critical place. I need a friend or someone else removed from it who can ask me the hard questions.
Although that friend probably shouldn't be somebody that's jumping on your bandwagon.
Yes.
I agree. You should be more bitter than you
what
are.
What a loser. Yeah.
Yes, because then they're just critical. Like, they need to be curious as well.
Yeah.
So I would encourage anyone. I mean, that's definitely, I think the counseling piece was huge for us, being able to have that person. And we did it on Zoom, which is what is crazy. I was thinking, how is couples counseling via Zoom going to actually work? And she was happened to be licensed in Florida, and she was phenomenal, just really helped. And that's why I love that type of therapy. It wasn't just like we were staying in the cognitive where we're just talking about homework and like, okay, he said, she said, and there's a place for that. But what we needed was to really unearth, okay, no, we have built up a lot of bitterness and frustration and just numbing. And we need to talk about what's driving those behaviors so we can actually deal with the root issue of the problem. Mm. And that was huge to see each other say the things that we didn't know because we weren't saying them out loud. And then the response in the moment was, I think, the most healing. Like for him to have empathy for me when I'm sharing how I'm really feeling in response to him was the greatest healing there was for me to realize, oh, he actually isn't against me. He actually isn't just taking advantage of me. Like he really loves me and he's got a lot going on emotionally that I don't even know about because he's numbing it. Mm.
Yeah. And I think when she was curious about me and my weakness, when she was critical, I was defensive. Yeah. When she was curious, it actually allowed me to be curious about myself too. Mm-hmm. And so that was a change.
What's that look like? Mm.
Why am I watching so much TV? Why are the tears coming? Why do I get overwhelmed? Like why in crowds? There's just things that I kind of wanted to like live in denial a little bit about or hide, but her curiosity drew that out. I felt less weak and more just, okay, maybe I need to be more curious about this new version of me too. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is going on, God's designed the marriage to be a place where you're fully known and fully accepted. Mm-hmm. Which is the very heart of the gospel. Right. I mean, no one knows us more fully than God, and no one has accepted us more than he has through Jesus Christ. And it's a real design. So then when we go to our most vulnerable places, the places we're most intimidated or insecure or scared to go, and then we find acceptance there, it takes you to places that are deeper than you'd known. So
it reconnects you.
It reconnects you.
Yeah.
What does your marriage now have that 2 years ago was not there?
I think after, you know, all the dust settled, there was a reorienting of my own priorities. Mm-hmm. Just kind of what do I really want to do? And I want to be a good husband and a good dad. Those are the main things. And I love being a pastor, but I had just been prioritize, you know, I'd just been burning it at both ends. That's the best way to say it. And years ago, Angela said, Jim, every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And increasingly that no is to us.
Okay. That's big.
Mm-hmm. And that was a category that I just did not have this some years back, but kind of revisiting, all right, what do we want? What's most important?
Let's reshuffle the deck of cards.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And so I've talked with you about there was a great opportunity in the writing world. And I was just like, no, I love writing, but I just need to focus here for right now.
Yeah, that's a big no. Yeah.
It was the easiest no for me because of just where we were and having our priority shift.
Yeah.
And
like to replace a critical spirit with a curiosity, hey, I want to know you more. I want to understand where you're coming from instead of just automatically jumping to the critical. Now, I don't do that well all the time, but like I said, I'm training my brain that when I hit the critical, oh, like here we are, we need to turn it around to the curious. And that has really helped, I think, our communication, our connection.
You guys, this conversation has spurred me on thinking because after I had that stint, life did not change one iota in terms of schedule. Like we were in Colorado in 3 days.
Yes.
Then we were with our kids out there for 5 days. I mean, it just because we had a book launch, it is 100% go, which makes you not sit and even ponder.
Yes.
And so there's been a gift for you guys. It probably was a hard one to walk through, but in terms of just taking it slow, and kind of analyzing what's going on, what I'm feeling. I don't think we've had time to do that.
I have.
We can recommend a good counselor.
Yes, we've got a good one.
Well, I do think that it's easy to overlook like how this falls on the spouse.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for another story, but she did have cancer years and years ago and I was the spouse.
Yeah.
And so it's weird to switch roles, but if you live long enough, it's going to happen.
You are.
But it's a whole different process for the spouse of the person who had the trauma and, you know, trauma's I recognize there are people out there with worse traumas. Right. So I do think I'm appropriate using the word, but we didn't lose a spouse. We didn't lose a child. We didn't lose a grandchild. And so I want to acknowledge that I did live. So,
but it's still a life-threatening event, you know, where you're not sure. You feel powerless. You feel helpless. You're not quite sure if you're going to live or die. I mean, that's scary. To me, that is a trauma.
You know, in some way, I used to preach back in the day, you know, James 1, consider it all joy when you face various trials of many kinds. You preached it too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that adversity or trials make you better or bitter. We can become bitter, mad at God, mad at our spouse, whatever, or we can actually, you're better.
You are better.
I mean, I'm listening to your story, I'm like, you're better.
Go through a season of bitterness.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think that we could have stayed there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that we didn't, that we, and even driving down here, I was like, do you feel like we're 100% back? Do you feel like that? And I do. I really do think so. Definitely sabbatical helped kind of finalize that. I definitely think we are, which is,
I mean, last thought would be for you guys to say to our listeners who are in a battle right now or in a valley, how would you coach them? What would you say to them?
Well, I, for one, believe that God is writing our story. And we despair, we become depressed, we become anxious when we think we're in charge of writing it. And sometimes we get really tired and we get bitter in the midst of waiting and ongoing struggles, you know, just that place I was with him, like, okay, how long is this going to last? When are you going to come back to me? You know?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to control the narrative. I want to write the story. I want it to go how I want it to go. And I forget that, no, God has a plan in this. And when I can actually lean into that and say, okay, God, you're writing a good story. Can I be curious about that instead of critical of you for what you're writing? And wonder, okay, God, what could you be up to? Because I know you're a good father, and I know you're going to write me a good story. It might not be the one I would have written, but it would still be good.
Yeah.
So what are you up to in this moment? And it allows me to wait with more patience and more hope than being bitter like I was.
What about you, Mr. Patient?
It makes me think of Philippians, where, you know, you see the theme of union with Christ. And what you see is the pattern of Christ's life of dying and resurrecting is the pattern for all Christians. Daily dying to ourselves, dying to bitterness, dying to a critical spirit, and then seeing the Holy Spirit do all these resurrections in our hearts of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. But the resurrection is higher than the death. And so, like, embracing a life in the pattern of Christ, where we are going to die to ourselves daily, but knowing and eventually experiencing all those resurrections in our heart that show us that the pattern is good. And I think I would also say, especially if the tendency is to isolate, which happens in this in a hard marriage, but it's also, I think there's a lot culturally that I could argue that makes us more isolated. The importance of the church. And I just think about, you know, when I had that heart attack, the way the church came around me was just unbelievable. I mean, I had people that I didn't even think they liked me, lavishing me with praise and are you okay and prayer. And it's just like, and it's like, okay, this is what it looks like to live in community. And then where is appropriate being able to go deeper with people. But isolation is maybe one of Satan's greatest tools. Yes. To divide us.
Yeah. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, and it sure sounds like rest is important as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, your sabbatical, I don't know if you would have taken it without this. And now you realize this is something I have to do.
It was on the radar, and I still even, so I had my medical leave, but then had sabbatical, and I was even still, should I put it off a year? Yeah. Things are busy, the church is growing, but I did it. And now that I've experienced that kind of rest, now I know everybody can't take a sabbatical, but there's different ways to rest. But I just realized, okay, I've experienced habits and rest and some major lifestyle changes that I need to really think through going back into my job full time. So
good.
Well, it's going to be really helpful for people. Thanks.
I know. I think so too. Well, thanks, you guys.
Always fun to be with you all.
Love being with
you. Such a treat.
Don't have another heart attack just to come back on. Okay.
No, absolutely
just one.
Not.
One of life. That's it.
That's all we need.
And you
either.
Thank you for sharing.
Yes.
I didn't realize you hadn't said that on air yet. So thank you for being vulnerable with everybody.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported ministry of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.